Why, yes, it is a Thursday, and it is the first full day of the NCAA tournament. KU in action tonight against Samford. You can hear it on the Jayhawk Network right on our sister station, Z96.3 Lake, with pregame around 8:30, tip time approximately 8:55. Brian Haney, the voice of Jayhawks, with the call. And Brian is with us, as always, every Thursday, brought to you by Anderson Insurance Agency. And Brian, of course, a lot of people are on their brackets. We were just talking about it before we brought you on. The chic upset pick, it seems to be, is Kansas losing to Samford. And I tell you, when people are all over something and jumping on the same bandwagon, that's usually when I decide to stay off of it. Because I think that it looks almost too obvious. But before we talk about the matchup itself, we obviously have to address, you know, Kevin McCullough's situation. He is not going to play. Bill Self referenced that earlier this week, said not only for this game, but he is shut down for the tournament. Obviously, a lot of people are upset about that. There's a lot of KU fans that are upset about it. There are people that are reading various things into what Bill Self said, how he said it the other day. Obviously, you're close to the situation. What can you share with us about Kevin McCullough and how he got to this point to where he's not able to play in the tournament?
Well, let's see. What can we share about this? You know, it's unlike anything I've ever seen before. Let me start by saying I love Kevin. I think he's a great kid, and I'll always be cheering for Kevin. And this is a frustrating deal that pains him more than anybody, emotionally and physically. Having said that, I never thought it would come to this,
Yeah. And
nor did Bill Self or anybody else. It's been one of those lingering deals that just hasn't gone away, and in his own mind, he just can't go at this point. And I think, you know, they felt like from a medical assessment standpoint that it would all along just be a matter of pain tolerance. Structurally, it was going to be fine. It was a matter of, you know, can he get through it? And we saw he wasn't as explosive and didn't have the same liftoff jumping off of that left leg when he was in there, but still was able to impact Kansas prior to the Houston game with 20 points in one game and 19 in another. And I think most notably his defensive presence is where he'll be most missed and where he helped us the most. But he was, you know, terrific given the circumstances post the initial injury. Now, when it first happened and he was playing through it before sitting down, we saw a really inefficient Kevin McCullough. And you and I have been over that. Yeah. I mean, you know, 5 of 17, 6 of 18. The shots weren't falling. He was laboring. But I thought when he came back in the games in which he played the full game, like that version of Kevin could have gotten Kansas to the Final Four. I really believe that. But after the Houston game, they had a game plan in place to rest him the entire week of the Big 12 tournament, just doing a little bit of, you know, rehab stuff, but nothing in terms of practice or sprinting up and down the floor, cutting or anything like that, with the full expectation to get him back Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday of this week. And, you know, Self had said he hadn't practiced on 3 consecutive days in 6 weeks, and any practice he'd had in the last month and a half had been just little stuff, you know. They really expected a full ramp up this week. But it didn't happen on Monday. They were concerned, and Tuesday became an all-important day. And then, you know, without diving any deeper than that, I think it got to a point where Self probably felt like, okay, if you don't think you can go today, or Thursday, that is,
Yeah. That
probably means you're not going to go Saturday. Because he said all along he wants the guy to be able to practice multiple days heading up to a game. In fact, at one point he was saying he needed to practice for a full week heading in.
Right.
I think it just got to a point where they needed to know what they were going to be and who are we, what do we have to work with, that kind of thing. And it was still not getting better for Kevin. And they made a decision collectively with Kevin and the doctors and the coaches that we're just going to shut it down. And obviously, super disappointing. It's different than the Joel Embiid injury that derailed the end of his season and postseason, because you had a more clear cut. You know, this is the injury. This is the timetable. This has been one of those nagging nursing things that is touch and go. And some guys heal faster than others on these. And just a disappointing deal all the way around. But like I said, Kevin's a good kid. This does change his legacy, certainly. I'm not saying it should. I'm just saying it does.
Yes.
Because 2 months ago, he was a projected first-team All-American. He was a mid-season first-team All-American. Wait, that puts 15 McCullough in the rafters in the most famous building in all of college sports forever. Then the injury hits, and he ends up being an honorable mention All-American, somehow made first-team All-League, even though he missed so much time, and then misses the postseason. He'll wind up in his 2 years at Kansas never playing a March Madness game under Bill Self, because Self missed last year. Who would have seen that coming? So it definitely changes his legacy. I'm not validating anything that folks online are saying or complaining about. I'm just saying he had a chance,
right,
you know, to go out as one of the greats of the Bill Self era. And sadly, physically, he just can't be there for his guys right now, and it's going to change the way his career arc is looked at. But him as a person, I'll always have, you know, high regards for. It's just one of the most frustrating, disappointing, and head-scratching injury situations I can ever recall. And, you know, to be perfectly blunt, it probably has a lot to do with the times that we're living in right now, too.
Yep.
You know, in protecting the overall big picture of his NBA draft stock and all of that, and not wanting to take risks that would possibly alter that trajectory too. So it's a different kind of era, my man, and I feel for Kevin, but I also feel for his teammates. And I think this group can still win several games without him. They can still go farther than people are giving them credit for.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes something like this can be galvanizing once you finally know, okay, this is what we got, let's roll.
Mm-hmm.
And you can pull together and all step up a little bit more collectively, but it certainly takes the shine off of what we were still hoping would be a national title type run, despite all that we've been through the last 2 or 3 months. And to think where we were projecting this team in the offseason and preseason as the preseason AP number one team to now what they've been going through, having lost 4 of 5, losses of 20-plus points in back-to-back games for the first time since 1919. Hey, man, nobody saw that coming. So this is obviously been a trying year, but at the same time, it's March. We've still got Bill, and as we'll talk about with your subsequent questions, there's still a lot of reasons to believe that this group can win 2 games in Salt Lake. And if you get to the Sweet 16, man, you're playing with house money at that point, because that's about as far as most were giving you credit for on Sunday anyway. I still think they can get there, but it's going to certainly take a great effort starting tonight against one of the nation's best three-point shooting teams and a club that will press the heck out of Kansas here in Salt Lake.
Yeah, and I think, you know, for KU fans, it's obviously frustrating because you went through this, obviously, to an extent during the football season with your quarterback, Jalen Daniels. There's a lot of mystery around that. What's going on? Is he going to play? Is he not going to play? Oh, he might practice. He might not practice. He practiced a little bit. Well, he might going to play. Oh, he's emergency quarterback. And you talked about how it's probably good that there's some closure. At least there's one positive that comes out of it, because you and I have been talking about this for 2 months. You know, is McCullough going to play? How much is he going to play? Has he practiced? How effective is he going to be? So at least there is closure from that standpoint that, hey, Kevin McCullough's not going to ride in on the horse and save us, you know, in a second round game after missing the first game, or we made the Sweet 16, now Kevin's going to come in and take us to the Final Four. You don't have to worry about that anymore, so there is some closure to it. I want to shift to Hunter Dickinson, because listen, dislocated left shoulder just a few weeks ago, you know, it's hard for me to believe that the guy's 100%, but at the same time, an 80% Hunter Dickinson is better than a lot of guys in the country in college basketball, and maybe he's 90%. I don't know where he's at, but tell us about Dickinson. He's going to go tonight. How effective do you think he can be?
He is 82.4%.
Perfect.
Into this, that's what he is.
Excellent.
Now, I think you were spot on, my man, and you and I see things eye to eye a lot when it comes to reading between the lines on certain quotes and understanding what's realistic and what isn't. Yes, he will play tonight, and I think he will play well, but a shoulder dislocation, though he has certainly recovered remarkably and is ahead of schedule, it is not something that is 100% in the rearview mirror in, what would this be, 12 days? You know, it's something that is still very painful. And he, you know, had a special wrap harness on the shoulder yesterday. He's icing it between practices. He mentions in our pregame interview that he's got painkillers on board, that kind of thing. And when he says that, it's Tylenol. It's not like it's anything dramatic. But the point is, there will be discomfort. However, he assures me that the range of motion is not affected, and he can still fully stretch and extend for rebounds or blocks. It's his non-shooting shoulder, but he can elevate that arm as the support hand in shooting the ball in his normal way without limitation. And his exact quote was, by the time tomorrow rolls around and I get out there and, you know, the sweat's flowing, the painkillers kicked in, all that, he says, I expect to feel really, really good. And he said he feels pretty good right now. But for somebody to hear Bill Self say on Hawk Talk 2 days after the injury that Hunter's going to be a full go and equate that immediately to 100%, that's not what Bill was saying. Bill was saying a full go as in he will have the green light to play and he will play in his normal starting role, But a full go doesn't mean 100% healthy, no pain, no soreness, no residual limitation. There will be some, to be clear, but he doesn't expect the limitations to be anything that keeps him from stretching or extending. It's just, again, pain tolerance. And we talked about that in the case of one guy's knee. It's a different situation with another guy's shoulder. But in this case, Dickinson, as he said yesterday, his words, not mine, I'm going to be out there with my teammates, and I'm proud of him for grinding through. He understands that you got to at this point, and really respect him for doing all he can to rehab this thing. And I'll tell you, 3 days into the rehab, he was wowing everybody with just how quickly he was getting this behind him. And some of that is just natural ability to heal, and some of that's toughness. And I think in this case, he's done a lot, and so has Bill Cowgill and the training staff, you know, to get him to where he's at here, 12 days removed from pretty serious injury.
You look at this bracket, the top half, it's what I'm going to focus on. Purdue's the one seed. They'll take on Grambling. They have to get over the psychological hurdle of knocking off a 16 after losing a 16 last year. Utah State's the 8 versus TCU, the 9. Gonzaga, the 5. McNeese is the 12. The winner of that game play the winner of KU-Samford coming up on Saturday out at Salt Lake City. So let's talk about the matchup tonight, because there's no need to look ahead here. You got to get the first one to get to the second one. There are a lot of people that are picking KU to lose in their brackets, 13 over a 4. And so forth and so on. And we know the reasons, of course, is because of the injuries that KU is dealing with. We already covered that. But also that the style of play. Samford wants to get up and down. They'll press left and right. They rotate 10, 11, 12 guys in. There's the altitude factor. KU doesn't have much of a bench, especially now with McCullough not going. If you got to spot Dickinson some minutes, you got to go deeper under the bench, or Parker Brown plays more. And Kansas doesn't have a ton of offensive players that scare you per se. Obviously Harris can at times, Adams can at times, Dickinson can get his double-double. Who's going to step up and make three-pointers? And Samford's a team that can absolutely shoot the three, as you referred to earlier. So what are the biggest challenges for Kansas in this matchup against Samford? And what is the key thing we should focus on when we're watching this game in the first half, or listen to you on the radio and you're going, okay, this bodes well for Kansas, or uh-oh, KU's in trouble?
Well, the second half's easier than the first. KU's in trouble is if Cinderella comes out, hits three threes in the first 90 seconds,
yeah,
and we think, oh, brother, here we go again. Yeah. Because it is, as you alluded to, a really good three-point shooting team, seventh best in the country by percentage. They hit 10 threes a game. Wade, how many times has Kansas hit 10 threes in a game? Twice. Yeah. And it was the first two games of the season, never again since.
Wow.
This is the first time in my lifetime we have ever talked about a stat of three-point differential. Now, you talk about percentages and how many you make, but never have we ever had a Kansas season where we've been so inconsistent from three ourselves and have been so vulnerable defensively in guarding the three that we're actually, at the end of every box score, looking up, well, how many points did they get versus us from three? How many more points were scored from beyond the arc? And with very common and repeated frequency, it's in that, you know, 21 to 24 points given up range for Kansas. And that's a lot to overcome. You can be the number two field goal percentage team in America at 49% from inside the arc, and that's a full season statistic heading into the postseason. We were second in America, first in the Big 12 in field goal percentage, but all of our points almost are coming from inside the arc. You can do that. You just got to hit a whole lot more twos if you're negative 24 in 3 points allowed. You know, and I'm talking about overall points from beyond the perimeter. Tonight's one of those games where Buckyball, as they're calling it, from Samford is going to chuck it early and often, and they'll probably hit 8-plus threes. You'd like to keep the number to 8 or less, not 10 or more. You'd like to see Kansas hit 4 or 5 and make sure that differential is maybe only 9 points in the, you know, overall three-point prowess of separation. Because if that's the case, then KU plays to its size, and you understand why this is a SoCon team versus a Big 12 team, why Samford, although very talented, is the 14th shortest team in America. 362 teams, they are 14th to last in height. Kansas, you know, if they can break the pressure and either score off the press or get in half court set, their size should win out. 6'9 Murphy, 7'2 Dickinson, 6'6 KJ, and Strong. You know, you hope that some of that size and athleticism to answer the first part of your question, starts to win out. But the longer you allow Cinderella to hang around at the ball, the greater chance she has of taking you down. And so I hope that Kansas can put their foot on the throat early. I hope they can come out, as DeJuan Harris alluded to yesterday, with their hair on fire defensively, and understand that, as Bill Self said, you know, we're not good enough with this year's Kansas team to just outscore anybody.
Yeah.
We got to win with defense by making sure they don't score. And DeJuan said the biggest key will be setting the tone on that end of the floor. And if they do that and KU is stifling and all of a sudden Samson's like, whoa, brother, we're not in the SoCon Conference anymore. This is the real deal. Then I think you have a chance to win this thing going away. But if you allow them to gain confidence early and hit threes out the gate, then you better strap up and settle in, because it's going to be a full 40-minute dogfight, no pun intended, with the Bulldogs. but yeah, that's what we're signing up for if they are allowed to hit shots early.
Yeah, yeah, it's a scary matchup, no doubt. But you know what? When you get to the tournament, every matchup's scary. It used to be automatically ones are going to move on. It used to be twos automatically move on. Now, obviously, you've seen here recently, ones can get beat by 16s, twos can get beat by 15s. Every matchup scares the you-know-what out of your own faithful, no matter who the opponent is. All right, time for the off-the-wall question. Brian Haney, the voice of the Jayhawks, brought to you, as always, by Anderson Insurance Agency. They do farm, home, auto, life, and crop insurance. Stop by and see Matt and Becky, 118 North Mill and Beloit, or call them at 738-5701. You mentioned the Bulldog. The mascot for the Samford Bulldogs is Spike the Bulldog, which I think Spike's a great name for a dog, or any animal for that matter. Spike the Bulldog. Can you think of a better or cooler mascot or nickname for a mascot? And you can't use Baby Jay or Jayhawk. It's got to be something different, okay? Is there some cool nickname for a mascot you remember that you're like, that's cool, or maybe it's silly or it's stupid or something to that effect?
Man, that's a great question. I wish I had more time to think about it in advance, because there's plenty of mascots that jump out at me. But I'm trying to think off the top of my head. There's a scary-looking mascot from Stanford, that Christmas tree-looking thing.
Oh, that is scary.
What's his name? Are you able to Google that while I...
Yeah, I'll try to come up with that while you do that, yeah.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I know.
He's kind of creepy. If I had kids, I think they'd probably run the other way. But I think it's not just the presentation of the mascot, but like you said many times, a great name with it makes a great impression, too. And certainly Spike the Bulldog is one that we'll look forward to seeing. And it could be a matchup of back-to-back Bulldogs.
That's right.
Gonzaga were to win and Kansas win. So who let the dogs out up here in the mountains?
That's the mascot, it's really super creative. It's called the Stanford Tree.
Okay, well, then I was way off in thinking it had a cool name. I just remember it being kind of spooky.
It is spooky.
So, you would think, as smart as they are at Stanford, they could come up with something a little more clever than the Stanford Tree.
Well, I think you nailed it. Just call them Spooky, the Stanford Tree, known as Spooky. The Spooky Stanford Tree. There you go. I like it.
Spike and Spooky.
Yeah.
Spike would probably lift a hind leg on
And that makes everything scary. There we go. See, we just keep going with the S for the adjectives and names. I like that. Well, you are in a S city, Salt Lake City, Utah, and hopefully KU can get it done tonight and punch their ticket to the second round. And no matter who they get, it's going to be a tough second round matchup as well, whether it's Gonzaga or McNeese. We appreciate the time as always, my friend. Safe travels back, and hopefully you're moving on, and we'll talk about the next weekend of play next Thursday with you.
Let's talk from Motown, man. Wouldn't that be fun? Absolutely. Either way, we'll come on next week and wrap it all up if it doesn't result in us surviving and advancing. But I really do believe we can win two out here, and it's my expectation these Hawks will find a way to keep dancing even without McCullers. So let's hope that's the case, and talk to you next week, my friend.
Sounds like a plan. Take care. Brian Haney, the voice of the Jayhawks, brought to you each and every Thursday by Anderson Insurance Agency. They do farm, home, auto, life, and crop insurance. Stop by and see Matt and Becky, 118 North Mill and Beloit, or call them at 738-5701.